This is the Quality News Network. The Al-Qaeda has taken responsibility for two suicide bombings near Algiers today. The first one, a truck bomb, utilized a ton of explosives. It killed 8 people and maimed another 30. The other bomb killed 1 person. The attacks come 3 months to the day from prior bombings in Algiers. Recently released Al-Qaeda videos warned of today's attacks. Algeria's interior minister said his country will continue its relentless fight against terrorism. FBI agents are scrambling across the United States to avert various terror plots that are suspected of surfacing this summer. Some 700 leads are being followed up on from the evidence left behind in the failed London and Glasgow car bombings. U.S. intelligence has found that Al-Qaeda has rebuilt back to pre-9/11 strength and operating ability. A new 5-page document titled Al-Qaeda, Better Positioned to Strike the West, covers the group's haven in Pakistan. The head of the CIA's analytical department said the agency is seeing more training, money, communication, and activity levels. Al-Qaeda's second-in-command called for a holy war against Pakistan's government. Message came in a videotape. This is the second tape this week from Ayman al-Zawahiri. The Pakistani army finally cleared Islamabad, Pakistan's Red Mosque today. The week-long standoff and ultimate battle claimed the lives of 106 Taliban-inspired Al-Qaeda-linked insurgents, innocent citizens, and soldiers. And in London, prosecutors say that they'll retry 2 terrorism suspects. A jury couldn't reach a verdict in their case. 4 others from the same cell were sentenced to life in prison on Monday after they were convicted on charges that they plotted to blow up subway cars and a bus in 2005. Their failed attempts came just 2 weeks after another cell succeeded in blowing up a bus and tube train, killing 52 people. Another team from the International Atomic Energy Agency arrived in Tehran today to discuss Iran's controversial uranium enrichment program, Iran attempting to forestall international sanctions. South Korean officials say that North Korea could begin dismantling its nuclear reactor by Saturday. The communist country wants fuel oil in exchange for shutting down. Surrounded by family and friends today, former First Lady Lady Bird Johnson passed away at her home in Austin, Texas. Natural causes. Lady Bird Johnson was 94 years old. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
The newly refurbished space shuttle Endeavour is ready to take off on August 7th on an 11-day mission to the space station. One of the crew has been waiting to go up for 22 years. She's a teacher and was Sally Ride's backup in the 1986 Challenger disaster. A 40,000-year-old baby mammoth has been discovered in Russia, perfectly preserved in the permafrost. A study released yesterday says middle-aged Chinese women who replaced their typical low-fat Asian diet with one loaded with meats and sweets are 60% more likely to develop breast cancer. University researchers say it appears U.S.-born and raised Hispanics are less healthy than Hispanics who've recently immigrated to America. Scientists cite poor nutrition, a failure to exercise, and smoking for increased rates of diabetes and high blood pressure. Genentech announced its second quarter profit is up 41%. That's over the same quarter last year. Cancer treatments and other drug sales are responsible for the upswing. Oil is trading at $72.86 a barrel right now. And on the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was back up in positive territory. It was up 76 points. The NASDAQ ended up 13, and the S&P 500 still did well, up 9 points. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Michael Coleman.
Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the Dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold. Hello, kids. I'm not Peter Godbold, but I am the producer of Strictly Confidential. We're having a small technical difficulty, but we are going to remedy that, and we will be on with everybody in just a minute. But until that time, we have some lovely dance music for you.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. This is Peter Godbold. I am your host of Strictly Confidential. Man, that was exciting. Just seconds before air, all of a sudden, my IP connection goes down, so I try to get that restored, and oh my goodness, I had to run and swap out the DSL box, and I seem to be steady now, so let's just hope that remains a go. One moment, I'm getting myself back into position to actually do a show. I was quickly trying to put on headphones, and oh my goodness, I'm too old for this excitement at the last second. And thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you'll find the links to all of the guests and all of the shows, and as well as a chat room, which is a wonderful place to be. Some of the best and smartest people on the Internet are in our chat room at this very moment. I'm not there because I got disconnected, but I will join it at some point soon, I assure you. Thank you for all of the supportive emails that I've been receiving. You guys are wonderful. The telephone number here for the show, right now the toll-free lines are down. They're actually working, but we have no way to answer them due to the machines being repaired. The call-in number is area code 304 658 5912, and that rings in West Virginia. And mail comes in to me, Peter, at headonradionetwork.com. I won't delay in getting to our guest. I'll tell you what, I'm very pleased to have him here with us this evening. His name is Jimmy Creech, and he's a native of Goldsboro, North Carolina. He is a former ordained elder in the United Methodist Church, and he holds a BA degree in biblical studies from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. He's a has a master's degree from the Divinity School of Duke University, and he studied with the Institute for Mediterranean Studies and at the Hebrew University and Hebrew Union Theological Seminary. He's also various archaeological sites, museums. He has pastored several churches in the Conference of the United Methodist Church. You know, if I were to read you a list of his awards and recognition, it would take at least 20 minutes. The recognitions and awards are from countless progressives and GLBT organizations. What is astounding about this man is not only that he is committed to GLBT's right to coexist on this planet, he's fought tooth and nail for us. And if I understood the Reverend Nancy Wilson correctly last night, Jimmy Creech, a straight man, did all of this at the risk of his career and his personal safety, and I am honored to have him on the phone with us this evening. Mr. Creech, good evening to you, sir, and welcome to the Head On Radio Network.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm delighted to have you. And I was in panic mode for a moment there simply because I didn't know if I actually could get you on. I'm so disappointed if I wasn't able to. Mr. Creech, I'll tell you a little bit about our audience. So we have a large number of straight folks who's program, all of them progressive and sympathetic to our cause. We also have a large number of GLBT individuals who listen to this program. So the audience is wide-ranging and varied, and some of the smartest people around. Most of them have not heard of you. In fact, I came across you by going to the Metropolitan Community Church site and went to your website. And by the way, you guys need to check that out. It's called faithinamerica.com. It is amazing. It is simply an amazing site. Jimmy, would you take a moment, please, to tell us about your history and what you've been through? And I'm impressed with you. I'm delighted to have you here.
Well, thank you very much. There's really not a there's not a lot to say, actually. I grew up as a very active member of the United Methodist Church. In 1970, I was ordained as a clergy person in the United Methodist Church. Served and just loved loved being a pastor. That's who I am. That's what I am. Served several churches in North Carolina, and in 1984. I was serving a congregation in a rural area of North Carolina, a rural town called Warsaw, North Carolina. And I'd been there 3 years, and a man I knew quite well, a leader in the church, a leader in the community, an educator, came to my office unannounced and in tears told me that he was leaving the church because he could no longer endure the pain that it was causing him. And I asked him to explain, and he told me that he was gay, and he was in his late 40s at the time, and that all of his life since he was aware that he was gay, he'd been struggling with the conflict, the internal conflict of knowing himself to be gay and hearing on the one hand about God's unconditional love for everyone, no matter what. You know, God would love you, God accepts you, God, you are God's child. But then on the other hand, hearing a message just as strongly spoken that if he was queer, he was going to hell. There was no hope for him. As a young person, he had no one to talk to. I mean, he knew no one who was gay. He couldn't talk to his parents. He couldn't talk to his minister. He couldn't talk to his teachers at school. He had no friends who he knew to be gay. So he had this excruciating loneliness, this solitude, and actually not really understanding what was different about him, but knowing that he was different, that he was what they say queer is. And growing up into manhood, I mean, he continued to struggle, but found some reconciliation, some way to remain a part of the church until his late 40s. And what broke, what was, you know, the last straw, what really broke him was that in 1984, the United Methodist Church passed a law, a church law, that forbid sexually active homosexuals to be ordained in the church. And he felt that was not only an offense to those who wanted to be ordained, it was an offense to all lesbian, gay, bisexual people. And it was just the last straw for him. It was, and so he came to me and said he was leaving the church. I had, before that moment, I knew no one had ever talked to me, self-identified themselves as gay or lesbian or bisexual. No one ever talked to me about what it was like. And I had, as I was, let's see, that was 1984, I was 40 years old. I had only those negative images that had been taught to me and that I had sort of absorbed from this culture to rely on about what gay people or homosexuals or queers were like. And this man did not conform to any of those stereotypes that I had. He was a gentleman. He was a gracious man. He was someone who was a public servant, someone who served the church. He did not meet any of the stereotypes. And so his integrity and the dignity that he embodied, and that I had known, had grown to respect over the 3 years prior to his coming out to me, challenged all of those stereotypes. In fact, he essentially exploded all of those stereotypes, and I had to re-examine my thinking and my feelings about people who were gay. And what I discovered after a period of self-searching, you know, looking into my own heart and also reading, doing biblical study, doing study in human sexuality, was that the church was guilty of institutionalized bigotry against lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. And that's not the language I would have used back then, but it's the language I now understand and the language I now use. I grew up in North Carolina in a rigidly racially segregated society, and the justification for that segregation was religion. I learned from an early age that it was God's will that the races be separate, that black people were inferior to white people. They were inferior intellectually and morally, and that the races should not mix. And it was, you know, the culture, the society that I lived in as a young person, as a youth, accepted that without question. And they would go back to the Bible to justify it. They would go back to church tradition and social tradition to justify it. And what I found in my study about homosexuality was that just as the church had wrongly used the power and the force of religion to justify segregation and the oppression of people of color, just as it had done that, it was also using the Bible and religious tradition to justify discrimination against lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. It was clear to me that just as the church was wrong about race, it was wrong about sexual orientation. And if I were truly going to be a pastor, so if I was going to fulfill my calling to, you know, represent God, however people understand God, how represent God to people and offer healing and acceptance and offer the opportunity to be in community, then I could not tolerate, I could not accept the wrong the injustice that the church was responsible for in regard to gay people, and I had to begin to challenge it. So in 1987, I began to do that, and I helped to, I actually moved from Warsaw to Raleigh, North Carolina in 1987, and I was one of the founders of an organization of clergy called the Raleigh Religious Network for Gay and Lesbian Equality. And we began, we understood our purpose to be a very public voice of acceptance of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people. We felt like that we could not, that it actually had no integrity to simply be supportive of gay people in the privacy of our offices, and then let gay people go out into the hostile world without our going with them to challenge the structures of injustice that, that exist. And so we created this organization. There were maybe just maybe 10 or 12 of us. There were clergy of various churches in Raleigh that had this commitment, similar commitment, and we came together and made a very public, became a very public voice in support of the full acceptance of gay people, not only in the church, but in society. As a consequence of that, my tenure at the church in Raleigh was brief. There was a significant number of folks who were very supportive, but those who were not happened to be the most wealthy members of the congregation, and they were able to use their withholding of contributions to really leverage the church to force me to leave. And
I understand.
That was sort of the early part of my my ministry.
Well, I understand from looking through your information that you actually had the gall to actually perform a civil union for at least two gay couples within the boundaries of the Methodist Church while you were still involved with the Methodist Church. Am I reading that right?
Yes, actually, I began to do to celebrate same gender unions in 1990 before I left the church in Raleigh, and at that time, the United Methodist Church didn't have any rules against it. And so I'd been celebrating Holy Unions for a number of years for same-gender couples. In 1996, I was invited to go to be the senior pastor of First United Methodist Church in Omaha, Nebraska. Between the church in Raleigh and the church in Omaha, I was in North Carolina, I was told I was no longer welcome to be a pastor because of the controversy around my support of gay acceptance. And I worked in a part-time job, and then it became a full-time job with the North Carolina Council of Churches, and which is a wonderful organization that was very supportive and allowed me to do a lot of work in trying to have the sodomy laws in North Carolina repealed, and also work with welcoming the Metropolitan Community Church into the Council of Churches. It was actually the first Council of Churches in the country to accept the Metropolitan Community Church as a full member. For 6 years or so, almost 7 years, I was with the Council of Churches. And my work there drew the attention of First United Methodist Church in Omaha, Nebraska, and they asked me to come because they wanted to have a ministry to gay and lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people, and wanted to have a minister who was committed to that. And so I went with great, great pleasure that I was going to be a pastor again. It just so happened that in the same year, just before I went to Omaha, the United Methodist Church passed another rule that said clergy could no longer celebrate holy unions for same-gender couples. When I went, I told the leadership of the church that I was in disagreement with that and that I would not abide by it, and that if anyone in the congregation asked me to celebrate a holy union, I would do so. And so in 1997, two women who were members of the church asked me to celebrate their holy union, and I did. And I was I had charges brought against me, and I was suspended from being senior pastor and was placed on church trial, and in 1998, What was interesting is that the rule, or what they considered a rule, was placed in a part of our church tradition that was considered advisory and not a law. And so we were able to convince enough of the jurors that there really wasn't a law against what I did, and they acquitted me. But the bishop would not allow me to stay, so I had to come back to North Carolina. And then a year later, I celebrated another holy union for two men in North Carolina. Again, charges were brought against me. In between the two, the trial, the first trial and the holy union I did in North Carolina, the church made sure that that it was a law that clergy could not celebrate holy union. So I was tried again, and this time found guilty, and my credentials of ordination were taken from me in 1999.
Wow. Well, you know, in talking with, I too come from a Methodist background. In fact, I still attend the little Methodist church. I live in a rural area also here in North Florida. I still attend the little Methodist church that I grew up in, and as you were saying about the fellow Adam, he reached a breaking point, or
yeah,
a point where he had to. I too have reached that point, and my specific breaking point is the Southern Methodist University taking on the Bush Library. Even though the White House hasn't formally announced it yet, architects have been hired. It's all a go. And, you know, you mentioned the moneyed people who squeeze you, and that's exactly what's going on with SMU at this point. The Board of Trustees are all extremely wealthy people with very deep ties to the Bush administration, and this has all been pre-wired pretty much since 2001, and, it, you know, it was withheld from the faculty, withheld from the students, et cetera, et cetera. It was all very covert, and for me, that's my breaking point with the Methodist Church. You know, at this point, I'm there every Sunday, but I stopped taking communion there quite a while ago, and it's just my personal protest against the fact, you know, if a church is, if I'm not good enough to get married there, I'm, you know, maybe I don't want to take it with these people.
Yeah.
I have, you know, and also you're talking about the various the books, and I know the Methodist Church has the Book of Discipline, and then there's something else called the Book. Is it the Book of Society, or what is the other one? I can't remember exactly.
Well, there is the Book of Resolutions. That's another one of the that's sort of the companion to the Book of Discipline. But within the Book of Discipline is the social principles, and it was the prohibition against holy unions was placed in the social principles originally, and the social principles have always been understood as advisory. It was after my trial, and they realized that they perhaps needed to strengthen the rule, they moved it from the social principles to the administrative law of the church, so that there was no question about it being legal, an illegal act.
Interesting. You forced their hand in every way, then, did you not?
Well, I really feel like the church forced its own hand. You know, if it had not made this ruling and to begin with, we wouldn't have any of this. They are the ones who said, you know, we're going to make a law and we're going to enforce it, so they have to be responsible for that.
I agree. I was, as I said, speaking with Nancy the other evening. I have been involved with MCC many, many years ago, and I believe this Sunday I'm going to visit the MCC in Tallahassee. The book of in the Methodist Church talks about how, you know, gay folks are welcomed, you know, with open arms and, you know, open our hearts and open minds being the slogan, but the logo rather, or the slogan. But I've got to tell you, the church is double-minded anyways, and at this point in time we see such a terrible assault from the right, and the lie, it's lie after lie after lie, and I've got to hand it to you to deal with it on this program. I talk about it a lot, but you have to deal with it in terms of confronting these people. That must take a terrible toll on you.
Well, it's very sad to see the church behave in such ungodly ways, in ways that are so contrary to what we know Christ, you know, the ministry of Christ was all about. It's more painful and sad to me than it is, you know, I don't really feel that I'm personally attacked, although I, you know, I certainly am, but I recognize this as expression of fear and ignorance. I mean, we live in a culture that has been conditioned since the Middle Ages to believe that same-gender love and intimacy is unnatural, it's not normal, and it's immoral. And people who, you know, one of the things, see, what Adam gave to me was a gift. He gave to me, first of all, the knowledge of him as a person, and then the full knowledge that he was a gay man. And that changed me. I mean, I could no longer hold those stereotypes once Adam came out to me. And there are so many people who don't have the opportunity to know Adam or someone like Adam or someone who is lesbian or gay or bisexual. And consequently, they live with their fear and they live in the ignorance, and the church supports it. And that's what is so unfortunate. You know, that the institution of the church puts its weight, its influence, its power behind the prejudice. It did it against black people in the South, and it's doing it against gay people today. The thing that consoles me is I'm confident that history is moving toward justice, toward community, toward the full acceptance of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people. And that the church is going, you know, one day, this doesn't give me pleasure, but the church one day will look back and recognize it's wrong. And I think we'll also repent and ask for forgiveness for the sin that it has committed against lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people.
I completely agree with you.
Regarding black people, it's done that regarding women.
Yes, they do. And here on this program, anyway, I call it the Bible memory hole. It's the scriptures in the Bible that seem to reinforce slavery, they haven't changed. They're still there. But now people realize that it is immoral to use that scripture to justify it. And so the entire concept of using those verses seems to fall into some sort of just goes down the drain, a memory hole. The same thing of women being subservient, and there are other examples, but it seems to me that eventually gay people and lesbian people we're all going to be in that same category, Corey. The church will conveniently forget that they ever felt that way. It's such an easy
thing. You're right. Probably 50 years from now. Well, let me back up a little bit and say Faith in America had an event in Washington on June 12th to commemorate the 40th anniversary of Loving versus Virginia, which is a ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court that invalidated all laws that made interracial marriage illegal in this country. Up until 1967. Well, in 1967, before the ruling, there were 19 states, mostly in the South, that said that people of different races could not marry. And if they did, there were legal punishments. I mean, people could get put in jail or in prison for marrying someone of the different race. This went back to, you know, to slavery and the belief that people of color were inferior to white people. And prior to 1948, all of the states in the country had laws that prohibited interracial marriage. So what's interesting is very few people today know that 40 years ago it was illegal in this country for a person of color and a white person to marry. We do have amnesia in that way. We don't know our history. We don't know the ills that have plagued us, and part of the unfortunate aspect of that is, in almost all of the cases, slavery. Well, in the case of slavery, in the case of denying women the right to vote, in regard to racial segregation, the laws prohibiting interracial marriage, all of those were justified by religion, by the misuse of religion, by religion-based bigotry. And today we look back and we say they were, you know, the use of religion to justify slavery, segregation, denying women the right to vote, denying interracial couples to marry, that was wrong. But people aren't yet willing to recognize and to admit that using religion to deny lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender citizens of this country their full rights is no less wrong.
Well, I have to agree. One of the most hurtful things to me personally about being treated this way by the church as a whole is how they continue to diminish us into just a sexual component. There is no humanity. There's no next door neighbor. There's no loving Christ. There's no helping others. It all vanishes. And with the constant use of the word homosexual, they keep nailing that word sexual, and then the tracks just are just pitiful. They first that you're demonized. And then you're diseased. I mean, there's a sequence. We talked the other night, the 15 steps to writing an anti-gay tract. Then you prove that you're a threat to children, that you're a drag on the financial, on the medical establishment, you keep escalating this all the way through, and then you always close with, but we love the homosexuals, and we're just trying to help them. Right. It's so hurtful. I'm just amazed that you get it. I mean, it's such a wonderful thing to actually talk to someone, one of our straight brothers, who just really gets it and has laid down the gauntlet, and you are an exception. I mean, the chat room are just amazed with you. Truly are.
Sorry.
Yeah, I have a sweet one too. Mine's just staring at me. She hasn't gone ballistic yet. She thinks I'm talking to myself.
It is interesting. I think in many ways, because people are becoming sensitive to the accusation of bigotry, and Fred Phelps has really made a lot of the conservatives uncomfortable because nobody wants to be like Fred Phelps. Wants to identify with him. Love has become the most popular weapon now against lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. People say, well, you know, I love gay people, therefore I want to help them change. And that is such a contradiction because it's an arrogance to assume the right and the power to define what is sinful about someone else and about their, you know, what is inherently their being in the world, to say that it's somehow unacceptable to God, that is the height of arrogance. And
I agree.
And love is a way of trying to hide that arrogance and hostility. It's really another face of hypocrisy.
Let me jump in and ask you something here. When we set up, you're being a guest this evening. Your agent indicated that you could stay till 9:30. I see that we're over that, partly due to our technical problem. Am I interfering with anything? Do you need to?
No.
I'm good.
Comfortable talking as long as you feel that it's of value.
Well, every word is of value because this is like a breath of fresh air. We heard some of these things from Nancy, and we're hearing the same things from you in your capacity. And it's so important, you know, folks like us. You know, we either grow up to hate the church and despise everything about, or fold into the church though and. In some mode of just silence. We know in our hearts that we have a relationship with Christ and that we love and that we're valid, but we just understand that other people don't get that, and we try to to be as forgiving as possible. But either way, it's a terrible stress. It's a terrible... People should not have to go through this.
No, no, it's extremely unfair. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people should have the freedom and should have the right to be completely open about their lives and about their loves and their families, and just as everyone, just as non-gay people are. My gosh, you can't run for president these days unless you're married to a woman. So, you know, presidential candidates are certainly very open about their sexuality, and gay people should be just as open, just as free to be who they are, and they have the right to be accepted, and they have full rights without any discrimination, without any question about who they are, and that should happen in the church, it should happen in society. I think one day that's going to happen. One of the real joys I've had in traveling around the country speaking to various groups is there are pockets of communities around the country where lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people can truly be open in themselves and be, you know, open up, in their relationships with others and their intimate relationships, their families, that they have created. Not only is it liberating to gay people, it is liberating to all people because it helps all of us feel free of all of these tensions and conflicts that have been created by this fear of same-gender-loving relationships. It's going to happen one day. But in the meantime, all of us, you know, who are suffering through the prejudices of society, the bigotry of the church and society, it's very difficult. It's very difficult. And, I mean, the difficulties I experience don't compare in any way to the difficulties that lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender folks experience, because, you know, what people criticize me for what I've done, that's different from being criticized because of who you are. It's a much more painful, much deeper persecution or sense of pain when it's about who you are than about what you've done.
Well, I respect that. I do. I have to say though, it's not growing up straight, growing up gay. It's not easy for anybody though. I my heart goes out to straight folks too, because, you know, they grow up, you know, like gay kids and lesbian kids. We grow up with the same, we inherit the same, you know, attitudes, you know, social stereotypes that they do, and it certainly impacts our lives. You know, self hatred, alcoholism, self medication, you know, the whole bit.
Oh, yeah.
And it has to impact everyone. When one part of the body, you know, with the hand wants to cut off the foot, you remember the scripture. And when we're not integrated, we all suffer. It's remarkable how much damage this has caused throughout history.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to explain to anyone who hasn't seen it all close up. It really is a very, very difficult thing to have lived through. And you apparently grew up North Carolina, I still consider that the South. You have seen, no doubt, a lot of what I have seen in growing up. Not that, you know, I expect or you expect everyone to come running to the church. I mean, some people are more wired that way than others. It's just part of the diversity. But in fact, whether you're interested in it or not, as a gay or lesbian person, it impacts us all. The amount of energy, the amount of sheer time and effort that the right wing Christians put into persecuting us, if that was devoted to helping people, to any number of wonderful social causes, but to direct that much energy into something that's oppressive and hateful, it's just sick. It's got to affect their spirit.
Well, it does, and I think the leadership of the fundamentalists and the right-wing Christians who are really pushing the anti-gay agenda should be held responsible for not only the harm done to gay people, but the harm done to faithful, trusting Christians who think that they are following faithful leaders. In many ways, unfortunately, gay people have been chosen as the target to exploit for the financial gain of the religious right.
You're so right there. You're so right. And even this ex-gay stuff is a financial thing. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. It's okay. It's not just that. You know, there are those who sincerely are of the belief that to be homosexual is wrong. There are more enlightened folks who know better, yet they use the public sphere of gay people, and they exploit it, and they continue to create these stereotypes and these really, really amazing and extraordinary claims about what gay people do and how bad gay people are for society in order to get the financial support of the public. And so it really is, I mean, I think it's criminal, in addition to sinful, for the leadership to really use the gay people, or gay community, in that way.
Absolutely true. And we were talking here the other evening about this, the ex-gay ministries. You realize, of course, that too is a huge fundraising. These programs are not cheap. They're books you buy. We played some audio. This guy had spent almost $70,000 in his lifetime for the in-house treatment, all of the books, all the videotapes, all the travel to go to these places, these centers, all the it's a huge fundraiser. And it's just awful the way, the Bible is absolutely right in that case. Money is, or the love of it, of all evil. I'm on board with that, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
One of the things that I may, if I could share a bit about before we come to a close, is that in 2005, I'll get it right in a minute, 2005, Mitchell Gold, who is one of the founders of Mitchell Gold and Bob Williams, the furniture manufacturing company based here in North Carolina, invited me to work with him. He had this vision of using marketing strategies to challenge, to educate America about religion-based discrimination and to challenge those who perpetrate it. And so I agreed, and we together created an organization called Faith in America. And you can go to our website, as you had said, it's at faithinamerica.com. We spent 2006 doing some test campaigns in Indianapolis, Baltimore, and in North Carolina, and also in Colorado Springs, which is a very interesting place to do it. Using newspaper ads, billboards, and direct mail campaigns to talk to folks about how religion has been misused in the past to justify discrimination against people of color, to support slavery, to deny women the right to vote, and how it's being used today to deny the full and equal rights that the Constitution guarantees every American citizen. To gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people. This year, we began what we call our five-city campaign, and we're doing campaigns, and we've done one in Iowa. We're going to Nevada next, then we'll go to New Hampshire, South Carolina, and we will conclude in Florida sometime in the fall. November is when we hope to be there. And to do a month-long campaign. Each of these campaigns will be a month long, and they will involve newspaper ads, billboards, TV and radio spots, and each concludes with a town hall meeting, which is open to the public. We want to try to help people understand that the same kind of of misuse of religion that has happened in the past that we now almost unanimously say was wrong is being used today against gay people. And it's not different in any way. It's the same kind of religion-based bigotry. And we've had we had very good response in Iowa, and we're very much looking forward to going to Reno, Nevada. The folks there are excited and welcoming us to come. We will then go to Manchester, New Hampshire, then Greenville, South Carolina, and we have not yet chosen a city in Florida, but we will be doing that in the next month or so. But we'll go there.
I would imagine St. Pete looks probably looks good, or the Fort Lauderdale area one. They're both. There's a lot of stuff going on down there regarding gay
folks. What we will be doing is contacting folks in Florida and getting advice like that, like you've just offered, in regard to what the best location will be for us. But what we've done is we've designed some ads that really speak to the history of religion-based discrimination. The religion-based bigotry, and as we were talking earlier about this historical amnesia that we have, many people don't realize that slavery really was justified by religion. The Southern Baptist Convention came into being as a defender of slavery in the early 1860s, many of the mainline denominations, including the United Methodist Church, split over slavery because the Southern Church wanted to support slavery and did it using religious arguments. The Northern Church said it was wrong, and so the church split. I mean, religion has been used, or misused, I should be more careful to say, to justify injustice in many, many ways throughout history. This is just the most current example of the misuse of religion against lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. So we hope to be in Florida in November when we have more information about where we will be. I will certainly get back with you, and maybe we can have another opportunity to talk and share with your audience about what we would like to
do. I want to tell you right now. We do not need to set up any sort of a formal interview. You, sir, are welcome to phone this program anytime, and I will have you on.
Well, there's
no question of that. Please consider this an open forum for everything you do. I think what you're doing is not only brave and true to the spirit of Christ. I think it's invaluable, and I very much appreciate it. I think you're a hero in my
book. Very kind. Thank you. I'm very grateful to be a part of what I consider to be the movement of God toward justice and community in this world. And I know that not all of the audience that you have perhaps is religious in any way or Christian specifically. And it really doesn't matter to me. I know that from my own perspective, this is a movement of God. In other ways, it's simply a movement of justice. And however you understand it, it's what's happening. And I believe that we will prevail. I have no doubt that we will prevail. It may take a lot of blood, sweat, and tears and a lot of years, but we are moving in that direction, and one day, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people will be able to celebrate in the most public light possible who they are and who they love and who their families are that they have created, and feel no sense of shame or exclusion, and that will be a day to celebrate.
Yes, it will. You certainly have earned some extra stars on your crown. I just want you to know that. I really appreciate it. And I also want to point out on your website how inclusive it is. You have links there to support groups for and Christian groups for gays, lesbians, bisexuals, transgendered, for Mormons, for Seventh-day Adventists, I had some of them out here, but I must have misplaced that piece of paper. But for for Hindus, for I was just amazed at the resources that are there, and which is what Christ would have us to do, to include everyone, to reach out to everyone, and to offer hope and sanctuary to everyone, if it's only to point them toward a group that would understand them.
Yeah.
I'm amazed by your site, quite frankly, and I encourage everyone to have a look at it. It's faithinamerica.com. That's www.faithinamerica.com. It is truly an inspiring site. Do you have without getting too into it or disclosing whatever, how do you do your funding, or do you have a donate button there on the site?
Yeah.
How does that work? Because it's something that I personally would like to support.
Well, there is a way to make a contribution through the website. There, you could also send a check to us. Our address is listed on the website. We really are supported primarily by individual contributions. What we're doing is so different, and in many ways it's controversial to many of the foundations that we have sought funding from, that we really have not had much success in getting foundation grants. So our effort is supported financially primarily through the individuals who support us.
Well, I think that's wonderful. You know, the things you're doing, you're talking about placing television ads, you're talking about placing radio ads, of newspaper ads, and there are some printouts of some of those newspaper ads on your website, and they are amazing. This is not inexpensive stuff. Nobody's going to cut you a deal on that just because you're trying to do something good.
No, it's expensive, and we really appreciate any financial support that anyone is willing to give. It's very important to us.
It's funny how people who are trying to do the right thing, like, for instance, this network also, we're looking for some more stable funding from, but at this time, we have to depend on donations, too, sometimes, to keep the lights on and the streams running. The things we do are not inexpensive either. It's the way of the world, though. If you try to do something good, you really have to, there's some suffering involved, is it not?
Well, there's also a good bit of faith involved. We don't always know that we're going to have the funds available to do what we want to do, but they seem to be coming in, and we are grateful for that. We have a very small staff. There are only two others on the staff. We try to put all of our funds into the campaign. And we don't have an office anywhere. The three of us live in different areas. We communicate by internet and by cell phone. We try to do our organizing as inexpensively as possible, so that all of the funds we have go into the campaign itself, the ad campaign, the educational programs. So, consequently, we have very little overhead, and our funding is program. We just try to do as much as we can with what funds we get.
Well, I, for one, the wonderful person I spoke with earlier today asked if there was a way to get an audio copy of our discussion, and of course I'm going to burn a CD and get that off to her. You're welcome to edit that or use that in any way you like, and I believe that I can tell you right now, I too am going to make some copy of this and make sure that they're handed out at the Metropolitan Community Church, where I'll be going back to this Sunday, and in any way that I can help, in what little ways that I can help, I will.
Thank you.
Thank you for everything you do. And And please consider the Head On Radio Network and this show a friend. You are a very special man. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much.
And thank you for spending time with us. It's very gracious of you.
Well, you're very, very welcome. Blessings on you.
Blessings on you, too. And before you go, I must tell you, you've made a huge in our chat room. There are some people that have been who said they've been moved to tears. There's quite a discussion going on about you and the things that you have said. You have made an impact. I just wanted you to know that.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Good night to you. Wow. Wow, I'm so glad we got the lights blinking again to have him on the show. A remarkable man and someone who did not have to pick this up, someone who did not have to sacrifice his ministry in the Methodist Church, someone who could have understood and someone who have cared about what we as GLBT people are going through, but did more than that and actually sacrificed their ministry in the Methodist Church, and because they not only talk the talk, they walk the walk. How rare is that? He reminds me of the people who came down from New York and the northern states in the buses to help protest in Selma, Alabama. One day he will be known as a great American hero. Oh, Jesus, what a great man. I'm so happy to have him here. I have to tell you, I'm a little off tonight because the startup of the show was a little strange. I don't have all my little pieces of paper, and during this top of the hour break, I'm going to get organized here. And so what we'll do is we'll go ahead and do the top of the hour news. And I'm just glad to be here tonight. We got the lights blinking again, and if they last one more hour, damn it, I'm going to be here one more hour.
This is the Quality News Network. FBI agents are scrambling across the United States to avert various terror plots that are suspected of surfacing this summer. Some 700 leads are being followed up on from the evidence left behind in the failed London and Glasgow car bombings. U.S. intelligence has found that Al-Qaeda has rebuilt back to the pre-9/11 strength and operating capability. A new 5-page document titled Al-Qaeda, Better Positioned to Strike the West, covers the group's haven in Pakistan. The head of the CIA's analytical department said the agency is seeing more training, more money, more communication, and activity levels. Al-Qaeda has taken responsibility for two suicide bombings near Algiers today. The first one, a truck bomb, utilized a ton of explosives and killed 10 people, maiming another 30. The other bomb killed one person. The attacks come 3 months to the day from prior bombings in Algiers. Recently released Al-Qaeda videos warned of today's attacks. Algiers' interior minister said his country will continue its relentless fight against terrorism. Al-Qaeda's second-in-command called for a holy war against Pakistan's government. A message came in a videotape, the second one from Ayman al-Zawahiri this week. The Pakistani army finally cleared Islamabad, Pakistan's Red Mosque. The week-long standoff and ultimate battle claimed the lives of 106 Taliban-inspired Al-Qaeda-linked insurgents, innocent citizens, and soldiers. In London, prosecutors say that they'll retry two terrorism suspects. A jury couldn't reach a verdict in their case. Four others from the same cell were sentenced to life in prison after they were convicted earlier this week on charges that they plotted to blow up subway cars and a bus in 2005. Their failed attempts came just 2 weeks after another cell succeeded in blowing up a bus in a tube train, killing 52 people. Another team from the IAE arrived in Tehran today. They're discussing Iran's controversial uranium enrichment program. South Korean officials say North Korea could begin dismantling their nuclear reactor Saturday. The communist country wants fuel oil in exchange for shutting down. Former First Lady Lady Bird Johnson has passed away at her home in Austin, Texas, of natural causes. She was 94, the wife of President Lyndon Baines Johnson, also known as the Conservation Queen back in 1965. This is the...
To be or not to be. That is the question.
Proficiency in reading and writing is a crucial connection to higher learning for both youth and adults. Without the foundation of basic English skills, access to education and employment is severely limited, if not impossible, for an estimated 40 million illiterate and semi-literate adults nationwide. If someone you know needs help in learning to read and write, there are local groups that can provide assistance without the threat of embarrassment. The Monterey County Free Library System offers unlimited one-on-one classes meant to help anyone at any proficiency level step over the language barrier. Weekly classes are held at several free library locations across Monterey County at no charge. For more information on Monterey County Free Library's Adult Literacy Program, call 424-3564. This message brought to you by the Quality News Network.
The newly refurbished Space Shuttle Endeavour is on the launch pad and prepping to launch August 7th. Crewing on the 11-day mission to the International Space Station will be teacher Barbara Morgan. She joined NASA 20 years ago. The first eco-friendly locomotives were unveiled at the ports of Long Beach and Los Angeles today. The new train engines emit 70% less diesel exhaust, 46% less smog-forming nitrogen oxides, and burn 30% less fuel. Over the next 20 years, the ports are expected to triple in size, and L.A.'s mayor says that that growth must be green. A 40,000-year-old baby mammoth has been discovered in Russia, perfectly preserved in the permafrost. Walmart is lowering the age it'll go after in prosecuting shoplifters. 2 months ago, the retailer reported staggering losses due to employee theft and shoplifting. They'll now hold a suspect for an hour instead of 90 minutes to his or her parents before they come and get him, before bringing in the police. And they'll lower the age from 18 to 16 for the first-time offenders of thefts over $25. Oil is currently trading at $72.86 a barrel at the close of Wall Street today. The Dow is up 76 points at 13,577. The S&P 500 gained 8.75. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Michael Coleman.
And he's back. Riding across America on a horse named Strictly Confidential. A man who knows his way around a pair of chaps. Here's your host, Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and I am back. I'm back. We're still on the air. I think I may have figured out what the little technical glitch was. It's Florida. It's very hot down here, and the electricity is very expensive, so I don't cool all of the rooms. Now, the DSL router is in a room that does not have any air conditioning. The vent's turned off, and so that room is fair, and I run Cat 5 from that box here to the computer, and I think the poor little box just overheating is what I expect it was. Tomorrow I'll correct some of that, and I hope that works out better tomorrow, because it seems like in the evenings when it gets kind of warm is when it does its thing. I just found out in the chat room there in Tallahassee, Florida, there is, which is my general area, there's a new organization made up of people who, who are not gay. They've amassed more than $1 million to battle the proposed marriage amendment to the state constitution, same-sex marriage. This is interesting information. You know, that he was just telling us, Jimmy was just telling us that there's reason for hope and that things are changing, and this is just as a little bit encouraging. The Florida Red White, the Florida Red and Blue boasts both Democrats and Republicans, and the organization says that the proposed amendment could be devastating not only for gay and lesbians, but also for unmarried opposite sex couples. And the group says that many straight couples and non-married relationships depend on domestic partner registries. You see, in Florida, you know, aging is a growth business. So there are many, many people, especially in South Florida, who are not married and live together, for any number of reasons. That's their business. But no domestic partnership laws would definitely affect them. I imagine part of these people, at least some portion of them, are referencing that as part of the cause. Apparently in 60 days they have raised $1.01 million. They're saying that it's not just a gay marriage amendment, it's going to affect a whole lot of people. It goes way beyond that. I'm just scanning to see. Also, there are over 611,000 signatures necessary to place the amendment on the November ballot, and this has to do with the Christian group that was trying to put the measure on the ballot. You see, that sort of backfired on them. See, in Florida, it used to be it only took 40% of the registered voters to put an amendment on the Constitution, which is a doable number. You can make a petition, but the big business that, you know, not wanting to have any input from the citizens whatsoever, only they can talk to the legislators, only they can control it. They got a bill passed that it took 60% of the registered voters. In other words, you had to, you know, had to get a huge number of signatures on your petition to change the law before you could get anything on the ballot. So now this has backfired on the poor little fundies, and they're having a bit of a difficult time reaching that 60% goal. They easily reached the 40% goal under the old law, but now they have a much higher target. That's courtesy of your Republican friends, my dears. And an interesting piece of news here about the American Psychological Association. They are about to do a review of this gay recovery stuff, this ex-gay reparative therapy. You know, that sort of, it was around in the 60s. People were sent to mental hospitals and had lobotomies and shock treatment in both England and the United States. It was considered a terrible disease, or to prison. But in any case, the fundamentalists have brought that back to us. Kids as young as early teens, 13, 14 years old, are committed against their will to these places, these ex-gay places. Well, anyway, the American Psychological Association is going to do their first review of the 10-year-old policy about counseling homosexuals. It's a step that we are hoping as a community will end this, any kind of attempts by therapists to change folks' sexual orientation. Now, the fundamentalists are up in arms. You know, it's called a reparative therapy or conversion therapy, and as we're discussing with our last guest, this is a huge moneymaker for the Christian right. Therapists are denouncing that type of medical treatment, quote, as futile and harmful to harmful to people, but conservative church groups are defending it. You know, they would, that some people have a viewpoint that they need to be changed, even if it means that they just have to be celibate. Lord have mercy. So anyway, there are scores of conservative religious leaders who are all upset. The Southern Baptists, of course, Focus on the Family, all the people that I normally mention here, the normal gang of thieves. And they are, you know, this is going to be huge. They're going to be raging about the homosexual takeover of the American Psychological Association, because you know how this is going to come out. The American Psychological Association is going to come out and say that, you know, whether a person willingly submits to it or does not willingly submit to this aversion or conversion therapy, it is going to cause them mental damage and, you know, all the things that we know to be true. And they're getting some of the ex-gay people up. And it looks to me like they're even quoting some of the ex-gay people who have already come out and apologized for being a part of the ex-gay movement. It looks like they're quoting people who have already said that, you know, they're sorry that they ever went. You know, the people are desperate, what can I tell you? They are going to get attorneys, and they're going to say the psychologists won't respect religious beliefs, blah, 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 blah. You've heard it all before. What more can I tell you on that story? I've already covered that. And let's get back to Alabama, which we weren't on Alabama, but let's go there anyway. It's our favorite place to bash. You know, every time you turn around, some poor kid's getting tied up in his mobile home and his throat sliced and set on fire because he's gay. In Alabama, there is a college production, and it tells the story of Matthew Shepard. And we all know who Matthew Shepard is. But soon, it could be banned in Alabama. There's a Republican lawmaker down there named Gerald Allen. He says that homosexuality is an unacceptable lifestyle. And there was a CBS correspondent who reported about this. Under his bill, public libraries and libraries in general could no longer buy new copies of plays or books by gay authors or even containing gay characters. Now, the representative says, I don't look at it as censorship. I look at it as protecting the hearts and the souls and minds of our children. So there you go. Books by Tennessee Williams, Truman Capote, even Alice Walker's novel, The Color Purple, has some lesbian characters in there, if you remember that. That will be banned. Allen also wanted to ban Shakespeare. That didn't go over very well. That at least even in Alabama, they recognized the name Shakespeare enough to say that you couldn't, that the classics were exempted. Although Allen now cannot define what a classic is, I think he knows one when he sees one, I think is the way that little phrase go. The librarians are, of course, freaking out. They're worried about the thought police and there, you know, people are calling it a Nazi book burning, but what this guy Allen says is that book after book after book that he picks up all contain the quote homosexual agenda end quote, and he is very, very alarmed. It's not healthy for America, and it doesn't fit what we stand for, and he says it's a lie. That was brought up apparently. The legislature it came up in the legislature. There were not enough state legislatures to vote on it, so the measure died automatically this cycle, but it's going to come up again. So basically, I think that probably some people didn't want to vote against it on paper, so they just didn't show up. But the spirit of persecution is alive and well in Alabama. I think that also you remember the story about the Alabama Department of Homeland Security. You remember the story that came up a few weeks ago that if you were a member or a supporter of GLBT rights, that you were listed as a terrorist on the Alabama Department of Homeland Security's website, that people needed to look out for you because you were there was very much concern that you were a terrorist. Well, I found out that there were some other groups included that. All you had to do was be pro-gay rights. You had to be pro-out of Iraq. You had to be an anti-war. If you supported Roe versus Wade, or if you were involved with anything to do with Greenpeace or environmental protection, you were considered to be. Oh yes, you were considered to be in Alabama. Well, the Homeland Security Department in Alabama was terribly embarrassed by this, and they pretty much cleaned up the website. Basically, the website now says the same thing, but they stopped listing the individual groups. Instead of listing all the people like, you know, gay rights supporters or whatever, it says single-issue extremists often focus on issues that are important to us. However, they have no problem crossing the line between legal protests and illegal acts. So they basically left it there. Now, mind you, this is what goes on about. They're worried about the tree huggers and this us gay guys and out of Iraq anti-military people, of which we are one too. But the worst acts of terrorism in Alabama, if you ignore the murder of gay people, which takes place regularly. I remember Eric Rudolph, the bombing of the abortion clinic in Alabama. Well, that was an act of terrorism. And remember the 1996 Olympics in Alabama? I believe that guy was from Alabama. And then just last month, or it might have been last month, maybe a couple of months ago, there was a anti-government, anti-immigration bunch of weirdos living in the north part of Alabama. They had they were hoarding like rockets, hand grenades, automatic weapons, thousands of rounds of ammunition. Now get this: what they were planning to do is stage an attack on an enclave of Mexican workers in northeast Alabama. So that was an act of terrorism that was actually about to happen. And, it just didn't look like it included anybody that was out of Iraq or supported Roe versus Wade. But, you know, that's Alabama, you know, day late, the dollar short. And by the way, did you know Alabama has one of the worst meth problems in the United States? I'll tell you, those illiterate folk there, they might not be too smart, but they're talking fast. There's a huge meth problem up there. People from all over North Florida go to Alabama. Well, not I. I live far away from Alabama. Head to Alabama to get their meth. And it's the rural meth capital of the South. Yes, it is. So, you know, I'd go on drugs too if I lived in Alabama. I mean, what else are you going to do? Let's see. Yes. And even more Alabama. Do you know that 44% of gays in Alabama have been physically assaulted and beaten by their own family members? Yes. Yes, they do. You know, you just wish that the GLBT people would just get the hell out of Alabama. You wonder why they stay there. You know, that was Alabama's the home of the Judge Roy Moore guy. You know, in addition to having the stone Ten Commandments out in front of the State House there, he said, and I quote, here's where does this quote start? He says, "Gay sex," he wrote, "is an act so heinous that it defies one's ability to describe it." He says it is, quote, "an inherent evil that should be tolerated, and that the state should be able to use force in enforcing biblical power of the sword to root out this evil once and for all." Ah, yes. Poor people in Alabama. You know, when I had the occasion to call Alabama a while back, it was when Bob and Agnes were in Alabama a while back, and I had occasion to call a florist in Alabama. And, you know, I know he was a gay guy. He was just as sweet as he could be. He was the nicest guy. I think I should call him back and say, "Hi, honey. I got this radio show now, and what we want to do is have you on the air so you can tell us all about Alabama." Yeah, that he might even do that. He might do that. I wanted to get into what in the hell is Cosmopolitan up to? But, you know, I tell you, if the gay publications did this, the right wing would be so on us, like white on rice. They would be so after us, and all the media, it would be everywhere. It would be coast to coast. It would be incredible. Here's what, this is what heterosexuals are buying in the checkout line. Now, I'm not beating up the heterosexuals. Beating up on is what the hell is Cosmo all about. But here's the article. Would you like to learn the 7 boundary-pushing moves that all men secretly crave? Oh, honey, please. And so anyway, this article goes on about sexy surprises and here's some examples. It says to the women, "Cup his hand against your mouth and flick your tongue quickly in and out in the center of his palm." You know, one of the people that responded to that said, "What's that called, a Helen Keller? There's a fire in the barn and Billy is trapped." Oh, it's too funny. And another fellow's wondering, "Well, what if I just change the oil in my car?" And another tip is to seductively lick a dab of food off your lips or your finger, and he'll imagine what that tongue would feel like on him. Can you imagine? Can you imagine if gay people, if this was on the cover of some, they would be all over us. It'd just be just all over us. Let's see. Here's some more. Let's see. Maybe here we go. Make a silly bet with your husband to pay off in sexual favors, or play a board game naked in bed, and agree that the loser has the right to the lusty request from their partner. So, you know, I could just see this. "You sank my battleship, you slut. Don't you ever speak to me again." Oh, Jesus, if you got to do that. Oh, and here's one. This is they would love to attribute this to the gay folks. "Chill a bunch of marbles in the fridge and toss them on the bed and make him lie on them while you straddle him." Oh, yeah, that'll work. That'll work. And, Jesus, just amazing. I don't know where they're getting this stuff. Oh, and here's the best. Here's one. "Slip a glazed donut around his manhood and nibble it off." Honey, I got to tell you, If you can slip a donut around his manhole, you don't need Cosmo. You need another boyfriend. Can you imagine? They grow them small at the Winn-Dixie. Oh, Lord. Take an old strand of fake pearls and, holding each end, pull them back and forth around the shaft of his manhood. And one guy writes in, yeah, in Bangkok, that's called a Barbara Bush, and it costs $50. Oh, I love it. Oh, that old cow Barbara Bush with her pearls. Lord have mercy. It goes on and on. This is the best. When fondling his manhood, slip a hair scrunchie. Now, that is a hair scrunchie. It took me a moment to recall just what that was, but it's like a ponytail. Okay. So anyway, you slip a hair scrunchie around the base of it. That's the way that reads, the base of it. The tight scrunchie combined with your touch creates an amazing sensation. Well, boyfriend, if you ever slip a hair scrunchie around me, I'm going to slap the shit out. So there you have it. There you have it. That's what the Cosmo is telling the straight folks to do. And if y'all do it, you're crazy. But what is it, some sort of mind control? Is it like, I dare you to do this? Or, you know, Cosmo says, and then, you know, you do it if Cosmo says, but if, you know, Cosmo doesn't say it. You know, it must be some kind of game. They can't be serious. And, you know, every 3 months they recycle all these tips over. They just reword them. It's the same thing over and over again. God almighty. Lord, and they're selling those in the grocery. They're selling those in the grocery stores in the checkout. And you remember Kroger? Where was it? Tennessee? Probably Alabama. I don't remember. Was refusing to carry the gay publication that just listed, you know, where the help centers were and where the you know, no sex ads or anything like that. Can you imagine if there had been tips about making your man lie on the bed with cold marbles? Good Lord in heaven, never ceases to amaze me. Oh, yeah, the Fundies are embarking on a 70-week cruise. A crusade. I'm thinking of the Russian story from last week, to save America. Yes, the Bible Beaters are going on a 70-week crusade to save America, and it's been launched by a team of evangelicals, and they're going to mobilize the Christians for the 2008 election. They've got about 750 people so far, and there's a rally kickoff in Lufkin, Texas. Now, there's a progressive city for you, Lufkin, Texas. Man, I just can't wait to get out there. They're going to visit 70 cities between July 4 and the elections in November of 08. And they're going to mobilize the churches and the pastors to take back the government from the homosexuals. Praise Jesus. Yeah, we don't want to see them rainbow flags run up on the flagpoles. No, sir, we don't want to have those rainbow flags anywhere near us. And it is interesting to note, though, this particular article, gay marriage has fallen down lower on their terms of priority. I don't know what's higher on their list of priorities, but apparently they're having a hard time selling that. You know, there's only so many times you can go to the corner and hike your skirt up and sell that. But in any case, they're got a lot of work ahead of them. And one other little story I want to get in here before we do the break is they found themselves another depraved pornographic preacher. Yes, this guy was in Arlington, Ohio, and it was a federal sweep, actually. He was caught red-handed downloading child pornography. He was the pastor, John Adams, and he preached at the, you guessed it, Mount Calvary Free Will Church. What it was there was an IP sweep, Internet Protocol, IP address sweep. And the FBI, they were doing a child pornography, and his IP address came up in that list of people. And so they went and they tracked the IP address back to the preacher. And when the officers arrived at his house, they served with a search warrant. They found child pornography videos on the computer. They said that there was a computer sitting there downloading child pornography at the time he was caught in the act. And, you know, I'm sure he's very sorry. And he will apologize and go out and get some of that ex-child molester ministry. And in a couple of weeks, he'll be healed. And he'll be completely... completely turned around, yes siree, Bob, because you know how them faith-based things work. Yeah, you just pay them your money. You pay them your money and you trust the Lord. And here's something about John McCain, blah, 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 blah. I think what I need to do is maybe let my whistle. I'm kind of off kilter tonight. In any case, as we come up on this break, you're listening to Strictly Confidential. The telephone number is 304-658-5912, and I'm your host, Peter Gott, exclusively on the Head On Radio Network. Be right back.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Mark your calendar for Saturday evening, July 21st, because at 9 p.m. until midnight Eastern, Billy Shears will be right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn. You're going to just love night sounds. We'll have plenty of great music and more. So, is it a date? We'll be waiting for you, Saturday night, July 21st. Be there. So you want to be free, live your life
where you want to be, will you give if we cry? Hi, I'm V.
And I'm John.
And we're from Fierce, a community organization for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer questioning youth of color in New York City.
For many years, the Christian Fellowship here has been a place for our community, a space where we can all go and be ourselves.
A space where healthcare providers can come and provide free HIV testing and information to other services.
However, these services and safe space are being threatened.
To become a member of Fierce and help keep our Christopher peers safe for queer and trans people, contact us at 646-336-6789 or visit our website at fiercenyc.org.
And welcome back. Welcome back to Strictly Confidential. I am your slightly insane host, Peter Godbold, and the telephone number, call me now, I'll read your cards, call me now. It's free reading. It's area code 304-658-5912, and carry me back to West Virginia. We'll have our toll-free lines hooked up pretty soon. I'm told that the factory, that mean old factory that took our beautiful Comrex, is going to have that all ship-shape pretty soon. And, you know, I'm having such a good time. I hate to do all this bad news because most of it is just bad news. I'm going to have to hire a research assistant just to find the good. But this one I got to tell you about. This is from Ohio. God help us. The Columbus Dispatch in Ohio. The schools have okayed an anti-bullying policy there for all the public schools, but only after the board deleted the references to taunts based on sexual orientation. Yes, you can still scream queer and faggot in the school halls of Ohio. The State Board of Education adopted a an anti-bullying policy after removing the race, the taunts to ethnicity, gender, religion, and sexual orientation. Boy, they just can't handle that, sexual orientation. They argued for hours about keeping the language in, but the debate finally boiled down to whether gay students should be explicitly protected from taunts and harassment. Well, duh! Hell yes, because if you're not explicitly protected, then it's open season. We all know that. It's open season all over this freaking country. God, I just hate these people. There was, you know, one of the fellows there, his name was Havis, was saying that, let's just say what this is. It's the issue of including homosexuality. And then they argued about it and talked about it. And finally, after they removed sexual orientation, they approved the new anti-bullying policy by a vote of 11-8. And the board members prevailed by putting a general policy in that that prohibits threats, taunts, and intimidation through words or gestures, but doesn't specifically mention any groups. You know, it's not like gays and lesbians are singled out or anything. So, yeah, obviously, we just don't need that. And besides, you know, your holy rule of churches will back you up 100%. You're doing the Lord's will when you're beating the hell out of one of them people. That's what you're doing. God for dead in Ohio. Things change, but they don't really, do they? You know, it's all giving students the same protection. And so that's what happened in the Columbus Dispatch today. And the conservative evangelicals, by the way, are just all in a tizzy over figuring out who their Republican candidate should be. Some of them want Romney, and some evangelicals are hoping they'll find a better Republican candidate, but nobody, they haven't found anyone at this point. So they're settling on Romney, the former Massachusetts governor now. We have a woman here, her name is Robin Nichols, and she's the mother of two, and she attends a Baptist church, and she disagrees theologically to Romney's Mormon faith, but she says that wouldn't stop her from voting for him because she believes that he was the most conservative of the top three candidates. Jesus, can you believe these people? Oh, Lord. She says his religion actually bolsters his credibility in my mind. He has strong family values. And he has a wholesome family image. Yeah, let me tell you about those Mormon family values. That includes, like, how many wives? And they're not enforcing those polygamy laws over there these days. They've made that very clear in a news story we did a while back. Anyway, she feels that he would be with her morally and ethically because of the Mormon values. And so now we've moved away from him not being a Christian. Well, I don't know. Maybe Mormons are Christians. They just have some extra volumes, you know, in their book, a couple of extra books in there. I don't know. If you're a Mormon, go to the Faith in America site because there's a link to Mormon help there. Go there. Go there. I can't help you, honey. I don't know how to help you. But so anyway, but she began to question all this Sunday. Romney was speaking as a Republican candidate, blah, 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 blah. And then she says, and there was Mr. Romney, and he opposed federal financing for embryonic stem cell research, but he would not outlaw it. And then Mrs. Nichols says, I'm so confused. Oh, it just doesn't get any better than this. Oh, you can't make this stuff up. She says, I like his stand on the families, I really do. But if he's going to put the leader of the Mormons before God, that's a problem. Well, where did Joseph Smith come into this? I thought she was okay with him with being a Mormon until she found out that he wouldn't completely outlaw stem cell research. So now, all of a sudden, we got Joseph Smith involved. And I think that was his name. Lord have mercy. There's no end to these weird people. I know what I want to do. I definitely want to do the Don's Track of the Night. Let me tell you about it first. This is so fabulous. Just hang on to your hats, kids. This is so fabulous. This is from the Jerry Springer, the opera. Now, if you haven't heard about that, it's huge in Britain. It's called Jerry Springer, the Opera. And it's all about the Jerry Springer show and how weird that is. But it also flips into some Christian themes. And there's images that, like in the opera, there's dancing Ku Klux Klan members And the musical is sung all the way through the whole thing. Everything is sung except for when the actor who does Jerry Springer, he speaks briefly. And anyway, it ran for over 600 performances in London, and now it's going to be appearing here in the United States. So I encourage you, if you live near civilization, which I don't, to go see Jerry Springer, the opera. And oh, and the Christian Voice, they were having street protests against it, and they were going to bring charges of blasphemy due to the way it depicted Christians in the second act. By the way, Act 1 is called Earth, Act 2 is Purgatory, 3 is Hell. And the way it works is, here are the roles. There's a character that plays Chucky, but he also plays Adam, as in Adam and Eve, in one of the other acts. Now, Chucky is Chantel's redneck husband who doesn't approve of her career. Now, this is a Jerry Springer show, mind you. Now, you've got Dwight, who also plays God in some of the other acts. Dwight is cheating on his fiancée and with two other people. Then you've got Peaches, who plays Baby Jane, and Peaches is Dwight's fiancée, but Baby Jane is an adult baby. Then you've got Andrea, who also plays the Archangel Michael, and Andrea is Montel's lover. Then Eve, and Chantel dreams of becoming an exotic dancer, but her husband disapproves. Then there's Tremont, Angel Gabriel, and he's a male-to-female pre-op transsexual having an affair with Dwight. You know, it's just standard Jerry Springer stuff, just all over the place. So anyway, in Act 1, there's this absolutely marvelous song called I Just Want to Dance. And you know, if you have a chance to go to YouTube, you might want to see the original. But this is the high-energy remix of I Just Want to Dance from the Jerry Springer the opera, and it's a Wayne G. Heaven remix, and it's just fabulous. Agnes, hit it.
Some living, 'cause I've done enough dying. I
mix-out portion of the track. This is where all the fine, fabulous GLBT DJs slowly mix out of the track and head into the next one. I have got to tell you, that song, in my estimation, completely sums up the attitude of the GLBT community. I mean, we've heard this crap for so long. We are so weary of it. We are so tired of it that all we want to do is freaking dance. I truly love that song. I just can't take any more. I put that track on and I shake the walls with it, and Doggy looks at me funny. Oh, my. I really love that. If you get a chance to see the Jerry Springer Opera, I would love to hear all about it. I seriously doubt it comes to Tallahassee. I think that might be too big a deal. You know, we sell the Cosmos down here with the frozen marbles, but we don't do Jerry Springer. That would be too horrifying. But what a wonderful idea to do an opera based on the Jerry Springer Show. Only those crazy kids in England could come up with something that bizarre. You got to hand it to them. I want to we've talked a week or so ago about, remember the kid who he paid $150 to have his own page put in the yearbook, and then the people who were passing out the yearbook, the school, they took a black permanent marker and you know, completely covered over his page, you know, not even a little teeny bit of it left, because you know, they thought that it was what was the words they used? They thought it was illicit, and she said she thought it was suggestive. This was the suggestive, that's late, suggestive. And so anyway, she was very upset by the whole thing. She thought it was provocative, and she said, it looked like two men kissing, and it looked illicit. Anyway, she was pretty upset about it. So then later they had to apologize because, you know, on the facing page, there was a straight couple kissing. You know, it's, these two guys that are kissing, it's just a headshot. All you can see, I'm looking at the photograph now, is one guy standing behind the other, and the guy in the front has got his head turned back over his shoulder, and they're kissing. Okay, all you can see is just the headshot, just their head. Now, on the page that's facing that, you've got a straight couple, and they're sitting on a... She's sitting in his lap. He has his hand on her leg, and, you know, they're going at it with this huge kiss in a picture. But, you see, that wasn't illicit. But I think I have gotten to the bottom of this little situation here. I now understand a clue about why that was covered over. These boys is black. Yes, these boys is black. Now, we cannot have no black homosexuals a-kissing in our yearbook. That just will not do. So there's the added dimension to it. This is a black gay couple. They're a couple of kids, and the guy said he wanted to put it in the yearbook because it was a happy time. He, you know, he loves the guy, and you know, it's puppy love. Who knows if it'll last? Who knows? But you know, it was a time he wanted to remember. And he says, no big deal. It's no big deal. All the kids know he's gay, and in school, no big deal. But you cannot have black guys kissing. Lord, that's evil. That's terribly evil. We just can't have that kind of stuff going on here. And I wanted to tell you about this. I hope I can still find it. It's let's see, it might be under here. I told you I'm a little bit disorganized tonight. It's got to do with the woman herself, with Laura Bush. Now Laura Bush, well, I don't see the article, but I can tell you about it. Laura Bush has had a parting of her ways with her husband, and we all know who that is, the Satan himself. She is advocating that this requires that 33% of the AIDS budget be dedicated to promoting abstinence. The AIDS groups, especially the ones working in Africa, are saying that this is completely undermining the effort. It just doesn't work in societies that are not as, you know, hung up as we are about the church. Well, you know, it doesn't really matter over here. I mean, you know, the hookers will tell you that when the Southern Baptist Convention comes to town, their business goes through the roof. So it really doesn't have to do a lot with the culture. But nonetheless, to keep the Chris Porters of the Bush administration rolling, he has committed 33% of the budget, which is huge, to abstinence. And Laura Bush has split with him. She has come out publicly saying that there's no need for that, and that it's undermining the effort. And I mean, you know, everybody's turning against poor George. How is he going to survive? You know, he said once, what was that about, even if until the dog said that, who's their dog, Barney? I think the dog is Barney, or maybe that was another president's dog. But anyway, they have a little doggy, and Bush was going on about how, you know, he would stick to that Iraq policy until it was Barney, until it was just Barney. Well, you just lost Laura. You've lost half the Republican Party. Your approval rating is below 30%. And yes, now even Pickles is coming out and saying, nope, this isn't working, George. George, I love you, but you're dumb as a rock. Don't know how I ended up in love with you. Oh, yeah, and I wanted to mention the Vitter thing this evening. We all know that he's missing in action. You know, David Vitter is the one who got caught with the D.C. madam has his phone number. He's the Republican senator from Louisiana, and he admitted Monday was in the little black book of the D.C. madam. But he's missing. He's gone. Poof. The Senate, he voted to confirm a federal judge, and Vitter wasn't there. The Public Works Subcommittee, Vitter's the ranking Republican on that subcommittee, and they held a hearing, and Vitter wasn't there. And three Louisiana officials testified at another hearing about the Gulf Coast rebuilding, and Vitter wasn't there. And Republican senators sat down to lunch with Vice President Darth Cheney, and Vitter wasn't there. He's vanished. The man is, he's so ashamed. He's so ashamed. He was proud of it, probably boasting about it until he got caught. That's the way these guys always do it, isn't it? And so anyway, he's disappeared, and I assume everybody's assuming that he's hiding out in New Orleans, probably with a hooker. You know, his wife remember his wife was making fun of Hillary Clinton? This is a few years back. His wife was going on about, well, I'm not going to be like Hillary Clinton with a stand by your man. Now, if my husband was ever caught cheating, I'd be like, what was her name, Lorena Bobbitt. You remember the Bobbitt woman that snapped that boy's equipment off with the knife and threw it out the car window? And everybody was going on about the Bobbitt jokes. Well, she was saying, I was going to be like that Bobbitt woman, and I'll snatch it off. Well, he's probably hiding from her now. You know, he's got to be hiding from her. Not only has he blown it with all the Christians, he's now blown it with his wife. His wife is going to chop it off if she gets hold to him. So there we have it. Another Republican bites the dust. Ka-chung. Just amazing. You just never know. Oh, yeah, I wanted to tell you about this. Oh, yeah, this quickly. I wanted to get this in. This freaking MTV, okay? Can you imagine anything more stupid? MTV owns something called the Logo Channel, and they're supposed to be having, like, the first candidates ever in a gay debate. Honey, this is not going to be a gay debate. This is such a freaking joke. It's supposed to be a one-hour telecast. It's going to be held August the 9th on the Logo Network, and it's also available by live streaming. And they're going to have Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and John Edwards, and they're not inviting anybody else, or if they do, it's a very limited group. You have to have a minimum amount of money. One of the other candidates, I don't have his name here in front of me, was very upset that they didn't invite him. Here he is, Mike Gravel, has steam coming out of his ears. Well, Mike, because he wasn't invited, Mike, don't worry about it. This whole thing is a joke. This is just a cameo shot. This is one of those beauty shots where these candidates sit down, they try to, like, out-gay each other, and it's going to get some votes from the gay community, you know, some of us who are not as informed as others. But this is not a debate. This is just a bunch. This is a cameo appearance. And they're going to have one of the, quote, interviewers is supposed to be like someone from HRC. And the other one's going to be Melissa, what's her name? The singer. Meredith, what is her name? Bob, you have to tell me in chat. Melissa, what's her name? So anyway, she's a lesbian. She's a singer. I mean, she's a great singer, and I'm not diminishing her. Manchester, is it? And not diminishing her, but, you know, couldn't they have gotten, like, you know, one of the gay bloggers or somebody who's acted in the news? I mean, the whole thing is just a huge joke. So, Mike, don't worry about it. It's going to be a puff piece. It's not going to be real, and I couldn't care less. So, you know, I got to tell you, I have enjoyed myself with you guys this evening, and thank you for being along with me. Just check out the Strictly Confidential Radio site. You'll find links to all the music heard on the show and just about anything you'd want to know about the show. Also, special thanks to all the people who are emailing and sending music clips. I appreciate that. And so, here's Cynthia Manley reminding you to... is Cynthia Manley reminding you to
you're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
This is the Quality News Network. FBI agents are scrambling across the United States to avert various terror plots that are suspected of surfacing this summer. Some 700 leads are being followed up on from the evidence left behind in the failed London and Glasgow car bombings. U.S. intelligence has found that Al-Qaeda has rebuilt back to the pre-9/11 strength and operating capability. A new five-page document titled Al-Qaeda, Better Positioned to Strike the West, covers the group's haven in Pakistan. The head of the CIA's analytical department said the agency is seeing more training, more money, more communication, and activity levels. Al-Qaeda has taken responsibility for two suicide bombings near Algiers today. The first one, a truck bomb, utilized a ton of explosives and killed 10 people, maiming another 30. The other bomb killed one person. The attacks come 3 months to the day from prior bombings in Algiers. Recently released Al-Qaeda videos warned of today's attacks. Algiers' interior minister said his country will continue its relentless fight against terrorism. Al-Qaeda's second-in-command called for a holy war against Pakistan's government. A message came in a videotape, the second one from Ayman al-Zawahiri this week. The Pakistani army finally cleared Islamabad, Pakistan's Red Mosque. The week-long standoff and ultimate battle claimed the lives of 106 Taliban-inspired Al-Qaeda-linked insurgents, innocent citizens, and soldiers. In London, prosecutors say that